Alan Kring Productions presents the Illinois State Collegiate Compendium, Academic Lectures in Business and Economics. This is Business Finance, FIL 240, Section 4 for Spring Semester 2018. Lecture 24, delivered on April 23, 2018. The title of this lecture is Review for Exam 2.
Today, Review for Exam 2. Before I get to Exam 2, I do want to go through the market screens just briefly, partly for the purpose of reviewing for Exam 2. Madam, good day or bad day on the street? Not one way or the other, just quiet. Right? You see that? Okay. Now, is that typical right now of the market? Is this a quiet market overall over the past, say, year, past 6 months? Sir, has the market been a tame, quiet, pussycat market? No, it's been a highly volatile market. And yet for a few days we've seen a very quiet market. You will recall last week I showed you a quiet market. There's an old saying about being in the woods at night and it's really quiet. That usually means that there's a bear that's made himself comfortable and quiet so that he, when you walk into the woods, he can eat you for a snack. Quiet like this is a little bit disturbing in a otherwise highly volatile market, recognized as such by Bloomberg, Forbes, Business Week, other publications, analysts saying highly volatile market, and yet it's gotten quiet of late. Now moving over here to the Treasury yield curve. This is the 7 and 10 in these two columns right here. The 7 and 10s are right here. Now, sir, what do you see? As far as the, what do you see about the yield spread? Is there anything?
It's 5 basis points away.
5 basis points from inversion, yes. Well, 6 technically, but I mean, if it gets to the same number, that's technically inversion. Okay, so. Is it time to call a recession? No. Now, why has there been a trend in the spread of the basis points since this class began in January?
Yeah, it stays about the same right there.
About the same? No, it's actually been tightening. It's been getting closer and closer. Let me show you. And that was the purpose of showing this to you. So I could ask you on an exam something about what it means to see it. Let's go back to the beginning of the year. The spread between the 7 and the 10 was 8. And it's been narrowing. There's a 7. And then a 6. And then we've got the 5 has established itself recently. It's just slowly narrowing. As I said, that'll drive you crazy. Will you please just invert so we can call a recession? But it's not going to do that. But there is something to be said for asking a question that relates to why I have been showing you yield curves for so long. Okay. Now, getting back to the market as a whole, to the market as a whole, there could be something about volatility on the exam. But let me give you a list of what I think are important things for you to know. And then it'll be your turn to ask me questions about what you would like. This is not a comprehensive list, and I would not ask these verbatim necessarily on the exam. But this is a good starting point for getting yourself studying and getting focused. Why does the capital structure of a firm matter to the firm? Why does the capital structure of a firm matter? Or does it? In other words, the debt to total assets and the equity to total assets, they're going to be numbers, and are those important to a firm? If so, why are they important? Why is capital structure important to a firm? Why is specifically its capital structure important to it? What is meant by the market premium? What is meant by the market premium? Now, I gave you a definition of that. It should be in your notes. It's also in the podcast. What is meant by the market premium? Now, remember that market premium is actually a longer term, but we shorten it frequently to just say market premium. And I do not want you to give me a formula. There's a formula. There's an algebraic expression, a simple algebraic expression for it. It's not what I want. I want you to explain what it means. And provide one way that you could create a well-diversified portfolio. Provide one way that you could create a well-diversified portfolio. What is the upside of this way, and what is the downside of this way? What is the upside of this way, and what is the downside of this way? What is the internal rate of return? And under what circumstances could it mislead you? What is the internal rate of return, and under what circumstances could it mislead you? Give two key differences between the bond market and the stock market. Give two key differences between the bond market and the stock market. Now, this is a relatively straightforward. A certain company's financial statements show a very high ratio of cash and marketable securities to total assets. Okay, that's the setup. A certain company's financial statements show a very high ratio of cash and marketable securities to total assets. What is the downside and what is the upside to this significant degree of liquidity? What is the downside and what is the upside to this significant degree of liquidity? In other words, we've got a company that has a very high burn ratio relative to the industry. Remember, burn ratio was that old school ratio you don't even see in the textbooks anymore, cash and marketable securities divided by total assets, or current liabilities in the burn ratio. Okay, what's the downside of a company having this anomalously high liquidity, and what's the upside of it? A company has announced that it will make a public offering of its common stock. A company has announced that it will make a public offering of its common stock. Give two reasons why this should raise, why you should be suspicious of this sale. Give two reasons why you should be suspicious of this sale. Now, I believe I gave you actually three reasons in class. As a general rule, debt is cheaper than equity. As a general rule, debt is cheaper than equity. When would this not be the case for a company? When would this not be the case for a company? Now, debt, as a general rule, is cheaper than equity because it has a lower risk profile than the common stock, because the debt holders have the prior claim on the asset, on the cash flow and all that. And also, the debt interest expense is tax deductible, which makes the after-tax cost of debt even lower. However, eventually, debt becomes more expensive than equity. Why? Under what circumstances does this happen? You have found that year-over-year returns on a certain stock are highly volatile. You have found that year-over-year returns on a certain stock are highly volatile. Does this mean that you should consider this stock a risky investment? Does this mean that you should does this mean that you should necessarily consider this stock a risky investment? Again, the year-over-year returns on a certain stock are highly volatile. Does this necessarily mean that this stock is a risky investment? Why or why not? You have to explain why or why not. You have been given the opportunity. You have been given the opportunity to invest in your company's employee stock option plan. That's the term for that is an ESOP. Now, let's make sure you understand. Do you know what an ESOP is? Essentially, quite a few companies do this, or it's been popular for some decades now. You can actually, for your retirement, have payroll deduction, and that deduction will buy your own company, the company you work for, its stock, maybe even a little discount. And you can build up lots of the stock. Now, the theory of this is that, well, if you have an ownership stake in the company you work for, that would give you more of an incentive to be a productive employee, because what you do for the company, you're doing for yourself by building your net worth. Why should you be wary of this opportunity? Put another way, why should you be wary of this opportunity? I mean, you get the stock of the company you work in at a little discount, and it's a disciplined investment, defined contribution, retirement plan. You put your money in, they just deduct it from your payroll, and you build up your stock portfolio. Why should you be wary of this opportunity? Does it click in your mind right away? We talked about this. Remember the hot stock tip story? Matter of fact, let me show you something here. That Google Finance screen, I deliberately took it down past the top, the lead stories. Now there is an investment advisor, Snoop Dogg. Yes, right there on Yahoo Finance, they are blaring a headline that Snoop Dogg, his top investment is 3 legal marijuana stocks. Yeah, that's good investment advice. Right there at the top of a finance page of the largest hit. Dear God. And then they put up some hoe handle who's got a college for financial planning. Okay. Do you see the point that I'm getting at? Remember that. If you answer that, if that question's on the exam, you think about Snoop Dogg. He might very well. Don't get me wrong. He's got to be one of the most talented men I have ever seen in his own way. He goes back to classic Greek comedy. His routine is extraordinary in its historical background. But I mean, and you've got a company that wants you to put your retirement into its stock. Do you remember my story of Enron? Enron? Yeah, that's the same exact thing. And those people, by the thousands and thousands, put their entire retirement into Enron stock in the ESOP. And then Enron, through the corruption, the brazen corruption of the top executives, Enron went belly up and died, and the stock became worthless. And those people, all of them, became penniless in their old age. As I told you, one of them, I knew quite a few of them, who worked there. One of them, well, he creatively killed himself in such a way that his wife collected the life insurance policy. And I give him credit, that was creative as hell. And they didn't suspect a thing. Would that I had his guts. But anyway, so there is where we stand right now. I've given you my thoughts, and they're just my thoughts about exam two. Now you ask me questions. Now that's not a comprehensive list. There could be things on there that I didn't bring up. So it's your turn now to ask me, is this going to be on the exam? If it is, I would say could be, Wabbit. If it's not, I'll say no. So it's worth your while to narrow the scope of your studying by asking me some questions. Go ahead, make my day. Yes. No, no. I strongly avoid anything that's math, but evaluate in terms of, well, if on Wednesday the yield curve inverts, I might put that on the exam and say, what just happened? But I don't, it's not going to invert. Although if it does, you'll see me all kinds of excited about that. But it ain't going to do that. It's just going to sit there and taunt me for the next couple of weeks at least. Keep going. I've left a lot of gaps in what I had taught you that I haven't mentioned up or down, so it's worth your while. Yes. Four. Same format as exam one. Yes.
We're going to need to know a lot about capital structure.
Yes. You're going to need to know why. Why do we even bother with capital structure? Why do we even notice it? Why do companies obsess? Why did I wear a horse head in this class? I mean, if it's not that important, I don't wear my horse head. That's why whenever I go out with friends, if I like them a lot, I wear my horse head. If I don't, they say, man, you're not wearing your horse head. You don't like us, do you? And I say, some fool video recorded that last semester and it was on Snapchat all over the place. A few administrators asked me about why I was in a horse head. Talk about awkward. Well, is there anything else? Yes. Say it again.
Anything like
that with
China?
No. I almost asked something about that with regard to what is the cause of market volatility. Technically, but I decided to avoid that whole thing because it gets speculative, more speculative than I want you to be at this point in the course. Good question, though. There were a lot of things I talked about in this back end of the course. Didn't I bring up something called the capital asset pricing model? Yeah, I did. Go ahead.
Yeah, two questions. One, are we going to have to calculate things using the risk-free rate?
You will not have to calculate anything. Never on one of my in-class exams.
Would you ask us about the risk-free rate?
I could. It's part of the market premium. Okay. So in that regard, it is critical that you understand the risk-free rate in order to give me the right answer for the what is the market premium? What does it mean?
And the risk-free rate, you say, would be the 30-year?
No. I traditionally use the one-year T-bill rate, but more commonly these days, it's a seven-year Treasury note. However, that's not going to be part of the answer to the question of what is the market premium, if I should ask that.
Okay. And then speaking of capital asset pricing model, we're not going to have to do calculations.
No, but you could very well answer a question about what it does, what we use it for. I could very well ask you that on the final exam. What is it used? What is the capital asset pricing model used for? Yeah.
Risk pooling.
Say? Risk pooling. No. You will be asked about risk to the extent of that question that I gave you about volatility. Yes. Good, good, good. I was wondering if someone would notice that I hadn't mentioned that. Not on this exam. No, you can stay away. Yes, could be Wabbit.
Yeah.
Only to the extent that you should understand what capital structure means, to that capital structure is the combination of debt and equity that comprises total assets. But I won't ask you about the component costs of capital. Other than that, the fact that one component, as I had mentioned, debt, that component of capital has a lower cost than the equity component of capital. So that's actually just a predicate to a question that I will be asking. But I tell you, debt is cheaper than equity. So how come debt can become more expensive than equity? Yes. No, I prepared one, but then I decided not to drop it. Another one somewhat related is total enterprise value. I brought that up in this part of the course, but I won't ask you that on this exam. Yeah. Well, yeah, that question what is the internal rate of return? And when can it mislead you? Which that question actually carries within it the net present value. You have to show that you understand both of them to answer the question. And by the way, for that question, the first part of it, what is the internal rate of return? The answer to that one is 12-word sentence. If you write it out the long way, so count the number of words in your sentence. If you go to 15 or 20, you're going 5 times around the barn to get to the outhouse, and by that time the wind will have blown the outhouse over with Grandpa in it. You find that funny? Wait until when I was growing up, boy, oh boy, you never heard so much. That night the wind howled and knocked it over. What else you got for me? Yo.
We have employee stock options on the test.
Well, that's what I just talked about. That could be very well be one of the questions. I don't want you to tell me what it is. I want you to tell me why you should be wary of it as a benefit. A lot of companies still say, we've got an ESOP. And there are still these management gurus who mindlessly say, that's a great way to motivate your employees by giving them a stake in the growth of your company. It's also extraordinarily bad advice. Although I have to say, it's not, well, taking advice of investing in one stock, making a portfolio with only one stock in it, is worse than Snoop Dogg. At least he was mentioning 3 stocks. But of course, you buy those 3 stocks. What's the problem? Okay, setting aside any issue of whether or not it's a good idea to blow Mary Jane into your lungs and out. Why is that he said 3, so let me buy all 3 of them. That'll diversify my portfolio by cracky. First of all, 3 is not enough. What's the second problem with that investment strategy? Go. Yeah, they're so highly correlated, you're buying one stock. I mean, and your investment could very well go up in smoke. Ha! Okay. Damn, this is a rough crowd. I'm here all night, folks. Don't forget to tip the waiters and waitresses. Whew. Okay, moving along. But you see right there, see that kind of advice. This people believe the internet. They believe, oh, I saw this, so I'm following Snoop Dogg to the end of the earth. Yeah, okay, whatever. Yeah.
Is there anything else that we're completely missing that we haven't asked yet?
Oh, very good. Not good enough, though. The Cap M. Actually, the question about the risk of the market premium carries with it. That was in the context of the discussion of the capital asset pricing model. Now, I'll be broader in my question about the, and there will be a question on the final about the Cap M. I will be broader in querying you on your understanding of what we do with that thing on the final exam, but not on this exam. What else you got for me? You're, yeah.
Would there be anything about ETFs?
Well, yeah, that one question that I asked you, how would you create a well-diversified portfolio? That's not the answer, but that is one answer you could give, something about that, electronically traded funds. But still, you have to tell me what's the upside, whichever strategy you tell me. And don't give me several and say, give me extra points. Just give me one. Grading 400 exams is a lot like work, even when you're answering sharply. But just tell me what, how you could do it, what would be your investment vehicle or vehicles, and tell me the upside and the downside of that investment portfolio creation policy. What else? Anything? Yes, I'm glad you asked that. Just like you did on the first exam. Now, on the final, I should mention that you get to have your first, your two note cards that you had, and you get to have one more. That's why you don't throw away a note card, which some people do. You keep them, because that saves you more work on for preparing for the final. Anything else you got for me? Yeah.
Office hours Wednesday.
Same as always, 1 to 3. Oh, on Wednesday. Oh, Wednesday. Okay. Wednesday, I will be in my office from 2 until my first class at 3:35, afternoon class at 3:35. Glad you asked that. Tomorrow's are just normal, 1 to 3. And don't come in with questions like, what's going to be on the test? And don't come in and I want you to pre-grade my answer to this question. And give me sharp answers. You'll do better. Average is a little higher on this than it is on exam one. Don't give me soft, diffuse answers. I do have a bullshit stamp. I haven't used it. I actually have used it in the past, and then I get crabbed at for hurting your feelings. And so I have it beside me. I had it re-inked at the beginning of this semester, and I have it right beside me where Phineas can push it off the counter while I'm grading. And you'll be able to follow live feed on Twitter while I'm doing this. Anything else? Say it. On this one, no, I will not have a table or a figure behind it. On the final, yes. On this one, no. Yeah. How many on the final? Five. Answer 5 of 5. Oh, well, the final, I take of the five, at least 3 are just copy and paste from exams 1 and 2, and 2 are from the base of questions that I've given you for the exams. So it's nothing new or blindsiding at all on the final. You're just showing me that you've met the objectives of the course. Which one?
If we were to listen to their podcast all over the
Oh, yes. Every one of those you'll hear in the podcast. Go. Oh, at the I drop your lowest three in each category at the end of the semester, after the last assignment has expired. The reason I do it then, once at the midterm, I drop the three lowest, you know, so everyone could get, and then at the end, I drop the three lowest, and I dropped the six lowest in each category. Well, everyone was really happy about that, needless to say. Boy, were grades good that semester. So I wait until after the last one has expired. What is it, like on the 4th of May? And then I drop the three lowest in each category. I give the zero. First, I give the zeros for any assignments that haven't been done to each of you, as I've been doing all along anyway. But I do one last zeroing out of any uncompleted assignments or undone assignments. And then I just, after I've done that, I drop the three lowest in each of the categories online and also the three lowest of your five in-class quizzes. So basically, only your two highest scores of in-class quizzes are going to count because there were only five this semester. I planned on eight. I don't know how I got out of hand like that. No, I have not. Yeah. The reason is because they keep getting deleted in a filter, so I have to go over there and get them on a flash drive. Okay, that's all I have for you. I thank you.